Okay. We are holding the second line from the bottom of Mevdalodoma Bays. The Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had described the details of how they did mitzvah lulav in the times of the Beis Mikdash, where if the first day sukkahs came out on Shabbos, which we said then in the end, according to the Maskana of the Gemara, you can only take lulav on Shabbos in the times when there's a Beis Mikdash, not afterwards. So when there was a Beis Mikdash, and those people who were in Yerushalayim would bring their lulav into the Har HaBayis before Shabbos, then the chazanim, the shamashim over there would set them out along the benches around the Har HaBayis. The next day they tossed them to everybody, and the Mishnah described the balagan that went on, and therefore how in the end they made it that you just take lulav in your house or in shul. So the Mishnah had mentioned that they laid out the lulavim. It said al gabe itzva, on the itzva. Now itzva means benches. As the Gemara is going to say in a minute, they had the Har HaBayis was surrounded with rows of benches, with columns and with pillars and a roof over them. So like this way, for example, a person, you're not allowed to sit in the Azara, but you're allowed to sit in the Har HaBayis, so this way people would have a place to sit and relax. And there was so you have the bench and then you have the roof over it. So Tani Tana Kamed Rav Nachman, a Tana taught in front of Rav Nachman, a version of this Mishnah, that he said, Sodrin of Gag Itzva, that they would set up the Lulavim on the roof of the Itzva.
Which is the...
The roofs over, so in other words, not the benches that are on the bottom, but the roofs on top. I don't know if they have a picture back here, but I mean, you can picture, you know. So here you have an idea of what they're talking about. Gav ha'itzva would mean the benches inside here, under the roof, so that the lulavim are out of the sunlight. Gav ha'itzva would mean on the roof, over the sun. This one. You have the gav ha'itzva, which means the tops of the benches, but then they're still protected by the roof overhead, and then you have gag ha'itzva, which would be the roof. On the left, Rav Nachman tells him, "Chili option with tzaris. You need to dry out the lulavim. Why would these guys be putting them up on the roof over there where they're going to dry out in the heat?" Ela'ema agave. No, rather you have to say that they put them on the tops of the tops of the istva of the benches themselves. So then they're out of the sunlight, and they'll stay fresh. Yeah, not underneath the benches. That would be a design for the mitzvah, but on top of the benches, but underneath the roofs. Yeah.
Underneath the roofs.
Yeah. Tosis points out, incidentally, we had a similar thing in Psachim, but in reverse. In Psachim, we had something about that they used to take two loaves of a korban todah, two loaves of chametz, and use them as a signal to the people of Yerushalayim when it's time to stop eating chametz, when it's time to burn chametz, etc. And there you have the other way around, that the Tana had said that they put them al gavah itzva, and Rav Nachman tells him the whole point is people need to see them. It needs to be al gavah itzva on the roof. So Tosis asks him, how did the Tana get it completely backwards? And he said, and Tosfos says, very simple, the first time he came to one of the, originally he used the same word for both of them when he memorized it. Then Rav Nachman pointed out in one case to him that no, it has to be the other word. So he made the mistake of thinking, well, then both of them have to be the same word. There's a Gemara in Sota that says about people who just learn, who just memorize Mishnayos and Braises without knowing the reasons behind them. The Gemara has an expression over there that just like a magician says all his mumbo jumbo and everything and doesn't necessarily know what he's talking about. So sometimes also you have a Tana, one of these guys who memorized and repeated Mishnayos and Braises, who says it without understanding. So I guess this is an example of that. Amar Rachva Amar Rav Yehuda, Harabayis. Stov kofel haya. The Har HaBayis was actually surrounded by a double stub. A stub is exactly what we're just describing over here—a bench or a colonnade, where there's a bench with pillars and a roof, where a row of bench, a long bench with pillars in front of it and a roof over it. There was a double one, stub lifnim mi stub, one stub inside the other. So there was double rows. I mean, I think some of Farshim actually understand this to mean that it wasn't just double. It means that it was actually one inside the other, and then you have each one is covered by a roof, so that most of the Har HaBayis that comes out is roofed over. We usually, you know, in all the pictures and models, not stepwise, just one next to the other. One next to the other. We usually, you know, in all the pictures and models and whatnot, they usually show most of the Har HaBayis as being open to the sky. But according to that, not necessarily was it. Not just around the edges, but even the middles of it, even the middle of the Har HaBayis, for the most part, may have been actually roofed over and had these benches. Mishnah says, Mitzvah Sarava Kate said, how do they do the Mitzvah of Arava in the Beis Mikdash? There was a place below Yerushalayim, down the hill from Yerushalayim. It's called Moitza. And the Gemara will tell us why it was called why it was called that. It's actually there's a name of that place. There's a place by that name, rather, I should say, mentioned in a pasuk in Yeshua. Only there it's spelled with a hey. The Gemara is going to explain that there was another reason why they ended up spelling it with an aleph, Meloshon Yotza, Meloshon going out.
Do we know where it is?
Roughly, it's an area. There is an area in nowadays is in the city of Yerushalayim because the city has grown. That they call they call it Moitza. There used to be an Arab village there called Colonia, which the Gemara is going to say was what they called it in the times in the times when the Romans ruled over the place. Yeah. Yerdin Lashon. So the people would go down there. Memhei Amud Aleph. Yerdin Lashon, they would go down there, Umlachtin Lashon Murbius Shal Arava, they would gather from there many branches of Arava. Murbius actually means large branches. The Gemara will say how large they were. Uvoin Vizosh Pinois of the Sidam Mizbeach, and they would bring them and stand them around the sides of the Mizbeach.
They used to grow there?
Yes. They used to grow in Moitza. This is right outside the city. Like a low, swampy area, so that's a good place for Aravas to grow. Nowadays, I don't know that Aravas grow there very much. It's probably built up a lot, but yes. I think some of it not, actually. I think some of it belongs to I think there's some part of it that's still a forest nowadays, but I'm not sure about that. Anyway. And then they would stand them up around the sides of the Mizbeach, but Hashem Kufun Agabem Mizbeach, and their tops would bend over on top of the Mizbeach. Which actually, you know, we had the discussion yesterday, we had the Machloikas Amaroyim, whether first they marched around the Mizbeach with them, whether the basic mitzvah is chibur, which according to Rashi means waving them, and according to the Rambam means banging them, or was the main part of the mitzvah standing them around the Mizbeach. So our Mishnah could be either way. Either way, there's no question in the end they stood them around the Mizbeach. Did they first walk around the Mizbeach with them? And actually the Gaonim, there's one of the Trivus HaGaonim that has yet a slightly different explanation. They didn't march around the Mizbeach, they stood around the Mizbeach holding the Aravos. Like they'd hand out to all the Gaonim, everybody in Arava, and they'd stand around the Mizbeach, and then they would put them up. Taku ve'riva taku, then they would blow, the Gaonim would blow a tkiya through a tkiya as a sign of simcha. That's for the mitzvah that they're doing. B'choyim makifnas mizbeach pam achas. Every day they would surround the mizbeach one time. Omrim, and they would say, Ona Hashem Ashiyana, Ona Hashem Aflichana. Yeah. Well, we don't say that when we do. We say that in Hallel, of course. I mean, they we're not necessarily saying that they said this as part of Hallel. The Pashtus, it means that they said it as a separate thing. When they're doing the Arabis every day, yeah, they
were.
We do on Hashan Arabis. We take the Arabis. That's because of the discussion in the Gemara yesterday. Why we only do it one day when the Mishnah they did it for 7 days. But yes, Rabbi Huda Omer, they didn't say on Hashem Hashiyana. Rather, they said Ani Vahu Hashiyana, which we do. We say that every day in Hashanahs. What's Ani Vahu? So Rashi points out, first of all, Ani Vahu has the same gematria as the words on Hashem. So therefore, it serves as a nice substitute for the words on Hashem. Second of all, Rashi points out there's a deep idea in Kabbalah about this, about the three psukim in Parshas Bishalach, three back-to-back psukim that each have 72 letters. They're describing the situation after right before Kriyas Yamsuf, when the malach that usually went in front of them went behind them, and the cloud that usually went in, the fire that usually went in back of them went in front of them, etc., and it separated between them and the Mitzrayim, and then Hashem split the sea. Each of those psukim has 72 letters. So if you take the first pasuk and put it forward, the second pasuk backward, and the third pasuk forward, you end up with, for example, the first letter of the first pasuk, the last letter of the second pasuk, which is the first when you're reading it backwards, and the first of the third pasuk spells out one name of Hashem. The second spells out another. You end up with 72 three-letter names of Hashem. Rashi actually says that when we talk about the 72-letter name of Hashem, that's actually what we're referring to. This grouping of 72 three-letter names. People have in their house paper the Yom Malach, a Segula, against fire, and it's not the Shem HaShem. Shem HaShem, simple meaning of the Shem HaShem, which gave up. But Rashi does say that the Shem HaKodesh is the name of 72 letters, which is actually 72 letters. I'm going to say Sefer Oziel HaMalach, which many people have in their house, Gula, for fire, but probably hardly anybody has ever actually opened it. Actually, it has a description, a short description of the Kabbalah of what each of these three-letter names represents. The 37th letter of the pasuk, the 37th from the beginning of the third pasuk, spells out Ani. The first one spells out Vohu, Vav, Hey, Vav. So therefore, those are two of the names of Hashem. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you mention them instead of on Hashem. Tosfos has a different explanation, which is that that Ani Vahu represent, and then Tosfos asks, okay, you have 32 names, why are you picking Davka those two out of all of them? So Tosfos says there's another reason, because those two words are related to the idea that Hashem is with us in Galus. Ani is the Ani B'Seicha Goyla, which the simple meaning is it means Ani is Yechezkel describing himself, that I was among the Goyla. But it also means on a deeper level, it means Hashem himself is in Golos with us, Imar Nechibitzara. And Bahu is also, Bahu also Bazikim, it says by Yumi, he was bound up in chains. Like Kaviyachal, Hashem went into Golos, bound up in chains with the Jewish people. So therefore, when we say Ani Vahu, is a way, Ani Vahu Hashiyana, is a way of saying, basically, Hashem, don't just, maybe we don't deserve to be saved. Save yourself. Save yourself. Save your own Shechina from Golos. So Ani literally means me, but it means it's representing the Ani and the Hu both represent Hashem. And this is, by the way, why. In many Sidurim, they have the second word of that in Hishinus, they say Vahoy, with a Cholam. But we, Davka, in our Sidur, we Davka, the Altsedeva says, but Davka there, that it's supposed to be with a Hu, with a Shuruk, in order to represent this idea of Vahu, Ani, I, Vahu, and He. That's representing the idea that the Eidushter is with us in Galus, and we're asking that he should help himself.
Why do you say Ani Vahu is just a
Galus? That means, so in general, anything that we need to be saved. I mean, even in the times of the Bismikdash, the world at large was not completely in a state of Gola, right? I mean, there's the Bismikdash, but then there's a whole rest of the world out there that still needs its Halah. So, yeah. But Oseayon Makipnes and Mizbeach Sheva Pamim. That day, on Hashana Rabba, they would circle the Mizbeach seven times, which is why, on Hashana Rabba, so which is why every day of Sukkot we do one Hakapa around the Bima, and Hashana Rabba we do seven. So one idea Marsha brings, and it's brought, I think, in various places in Chassidus, is that it's similar to the circuits that they made around the wall of Yericho. When they first conquered Eretz Yisrael, the Eretz Yisrael told them, go around the wall of Yericho every day for the first 6 days, every day one time around. And then on the seventh day, you go around seven times, you blow the shofar, and the wall will sink into the ground. So just like Hashem helped us over there, we're asking that Hashem should help us with it. Just like we surrounded Yericho then, and Hashem helped us, so also asking, we're surrounding the Mizbeach with our Rabbis, and Hashem should help us with whatever we need.
We're higher than
Mizbeach. Yeah. B'shas p'tirot and mahinah. I mean, what would they say when they left, when they were leaving? Some of Farshim say this means every day. Others say it means Hanushan and Abba. They would say, Yoyfi loch Mizbeach, Yoyfi loch Mizbeach. This beauty, this that we're beautifying the Mizbeach by putting all these Rabbis around it, is for you, Mizbeach, because you are Mechaper for us. Yofi Loch Mizbeach, they would repeat it.
And it's the last day before they left?
So some say it was every day, and some before Hashem say it was every day, some say that it was only on Hashanah Rabbah. Rabbi Elazar, I mean, Rabbi Elazar says they would say differently. They would say, L'kav Loch Mizbeach, this is for Hashem and for you, Mizbeach. L'kav Loch Mizbeach, for Hashem and for you, Mizbeach. Which the Gemara is going to ask, how you're allowed to combine Hashem with anything else? How you're allowed to be praising Hashem and the Mizbeach? So we'll talk about it on the Gemara. The same way as they did the mitzvah of Arava when on weekdays, the same way they would do it on Shabbos, as we said in the first mission of the Perek, when Hoshana Rabbah came out on Shabbos, which occurred in those days. Except they couldn't pick the Arabas on Shabbos itself. They had to pick them before Shabbos. And they would put them in golden barrels, Kadesh Aleich Moshu, in order that they don't wilt. Because Arabas, you know, go dry very fast out of water, so this way they'd have to keep them in the water until they're ready to use them.
The gigyot
shazar. Gigyot means like barrels.
Barrels of gold.
Yeah, because in general, most of the kelim in the mikdash were made out of gold because ein anias makom hashir, a place of wealth, a place that's the house of Hashem who owns everything in the world. It's appropriate to make things as beautiful as possible. So yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, in times when they couldn't afford it, fine, they'd make it out of something else. But when they were able to afford it, yeah.
Okay.
The same way as we had in Yoma, we had over there about Munbaz making the handles of all the kelim out of gold, and various things that we had over there that were made special for Yom Kippur out of gold, etc. Same idea. The Aruch HaNer points out, I mean, it's not just Shabbos. I mean, you would think they would have had to do the same thing for the Arovis they used on the first day of Yom Tov also. They can't pick them on Yom Tov. So he discusses the possibility that maybe actually Minat Torah you would be allowed to pick them and it's only Midraban on your officer, or maybe indeed they did have to pick them before Yom Tov, but they didn't necessarily have to put them in barrels in the Bais Mikdash. You're allowed to carry on Yom Tov. They could put them anywhere and then bring them to the Bais Mikdash on Yom Tov. Whereas when it came to Shabbos specifically, they'd have to make sure they were on the Har HaBayis before Shabbos. Yeah. The Yerushalmi of Jerusalem, it was an Arovis, or maybe it was an addition to Arovis. Tosfos discusses this on Amud Beis. Charius shel dekel hayom avi, and they used to bring branches of palm trees. Charius, we had in the previous perek, meant like mature branches of palm trees after the leaves have already spread apart and become hardened. So they would bring that type of branch. It's not kosher for lulav, but they would bring them and they would beat them on the ground around the sides of the mizbeach. That day was called the day of beating the branches. So again, are we talking about that Tosfos discusses in Amud Beis? Are we talking about that Rabbi Yochanan ben Breka is arguing with the whole concept? He says they didn't use arovas; they only used palm branches. Or is he saying there were two things? They used arovas, and in addition, they also beat these palm branches. Continues the Mishnah, Miyad Tinoikus Shem Tenes Lulvehen, from the hands of the children, they would drop their lulavim. They would make them drop their lulavim. This is talking about Hashanah Rabbah. The kids have their own lulav and esrog. On the seventh day, after they're finished taking lulav and esrog, and after they finished with the whole thing with the arava, then the grown-ups, this is Rashi's first explanation, he has a second explanation later on, which I'll tell you in a second, right after that, the adults would make the kids drop their lulavim the whole thing was an expression of simcha. But oichlan esrogein, and they'd take their esrogim and eat them. So Rashi says, usually you would think it's a matter of gevul. You'd say, how can you take something away from a kid like that? This kid doesn't even have the ability to be moichel. But here they were doing it as a chach nagu machmas simcha. The whole thing was an expression of simcha. So therefore, it was a generally accepted thing that it's allowed to do. And Tosfos, no, so it's not. Tosfos actually brings an interesting thing. We see from Tosfos discusses an interesting thing that tells us a little historical sidelight. You've probably seen in depictions in books or movies or whatever how in those days a favorite sport that knights had was jousting, right? You know, two knights ride towards each other on horses holding these long lances, and they're trying to knock each other one off their horse. Apparently, in the times of Tosfos, apparently in the times of the Rishonim, Jews had a minhag as well to do that by weddings.
They used to
joust by weddings as an expression of simcha.
I remember hearing that.
Yes. So therefore, sometimes you might have, in the course of jousting, you tear the other guy's clothes, you cause him damage or whatever. Do you owe him? Are you chayiv in the nezikrit? Tosfos says no, because we're doing it out of simcha. Everybody who goes into it understands we're doing it as a matter of simcha. We're not doing it, you know, nobody's responsible, basically.
They all accepted beforehand.
So similarly, over here, it was accepted. It was a known thing from year to year that they're gonna make the kids drop their lulavim. They're gonna grab their esrogim and eat it. It's all an expression of simcha. Rashi does have a different expression. Rashi does have a different explanation, although he says he doesn't prefer it. That the word miyad here doesn't mean from the hands; it means immediately. Immediately after all of this was done, Tanoika's strength in the full van, the kids would drop their lulavim, they don't need them anymore, and they themselves would eat their esrogim, the kids, that is. However, Rashi says, you know, there's a famous, you know, you have that famous story. That's Rashi. Rashi on Memvolo and Bey says this. But Rashi brings over there, you know, the famous story of the chassid who gave away all his money to tzedakah, and then, his wife gives him money on Hashanah Rabbah and tells him to go buy something nice for the kids for Shmini Atzeres, for the last of the Yom Tov. He goes and gives it to Aniyim as well. They're collecting for tzedakah. And then, you know, what am I going to find to bring home? And he goes, he finds some, you know, in the story, the way they always tell it to kids, he finds some abandoned esrogim, and he decides, you know what, I'll fill up a bag with those and I'll take them home. At least my kids will have a esrogim to play with. And then he gets blown. He ends up going on a ship and gets blown off course. It's a whole long. If you don't know the story, remind me. I'll tell it to you afterwards. But you know, that's the way they always tell it to kids. Is just he finds a bunch of abandoned esrogim. Rashi brings to the Medrash that no, actually it was like we're saying over here in the Mishnah. He went and grabbed esrogim from a bunch of kids and then filled up his bag with them, and the whole story develops from there. So therefore Rashi says we see from that there is this concept of grabbing the esrogim from the kids.
In a way,
that's probably why they don't tell it that way to the kids, because it's really hard to explain nowadays, but yeah. So the Gemara says, first of all, a Mishnah had said that they went to Moitza to gather these Aravos. Tana, we learn in a Braitha, Mokum Kolonia Haya. It was a place that was free from taxes. Kolonia is actually, it's similar to the Roman word for colony. A Roman colony in those days was a place that was exempt from taxes. Here also, this place was, the kings exempted this place from taxes. Some of Farshim say because it was a more or less wild area anyway. That's one reason why they'd gather our rabbits there, because this way they don't have to worry about that they're stealing them from anybody's property. And I think other Mepharshim say actually because they provided the Aravos for this purpose, therefore the kings gave them a break from taxes. Matani didan my time accordingly Moitza. Why does Artana call the place Moitza? I did a meitak mikraga de malka, because it's exempted Moitza Meloshin going out from the king's taxes, accordingly Moitza. Therefore it's called Moitza. That's what I'm saying. Even in the Pasuk, the name of a place called Moitza, assuming it's the same place, could be in the times of the Pasuk when they conquered out Israel, listed in Sefer Yeshua. It was called, either maybe then it was exempt from taxes or for some other reason, or maybe originally it had the name Moitza just because of whatever, and later on they reanalyzed the name as, you know what, it's also good to call it Moitza with an Aleph, Moloshin, and it's exempt from taxes. Like I say, up to 70 years ago, up to the Israeli independence war, there was an Arab village there called Kolonia. And they used to talk, it was one of the popular places to get Aravos for the mitzvah for the people of Yerushalayim. And nowadays, part of greater Yerushalayim, I believe it's called Moitza again. The Mishnah said, Uvoin v'zoik pronos in b'tzidich, although that they go and stand up these Aravos around the sides of the Mizbeach. Tana, we learn in a Braisa, Rabos, they were many, or goes my Rav Ransburg says, not many, but Rakos, they were pliable. They were pliable because we need them to bend over the top of the Mizbeach. V'aruchos, and they were long, Ugvoyos achadasa amma, they were 11 amos tall. Which 11 amos, we're talking like 16 feet. That's pretty tall. Kadeshi Yu Goichos Alam Mizbeach Amma, in order that they can be bending over the Mizbeach one Amma. Goichos, Rashi says, means like bending over. They're not actually lying on top of the Mizbeach, but they're like bending over like this.
16 feet?
16 feet tall from floor to apparently in Moitza they could. Amma Marema Mashum Mazutra. So Marema says the name Mazutra. Shmamino Ala Yesod Manachlu. You see from that description, that they must have placed the Aravos on top of the Yesod. We know how the Mizbeach was built. Basically, there was a Yesod that went around. There was a Yesod that went around two sides. That went around two sides at the bottom of it. Then on top of that, you had the next level of the Mizbeach, and then on top of that, you had a narrower level, etc. So you know it narrows. It would be better actually if we can find a 3D, if we can find a 3D image to illustrate it. Here we go. You have the Yesod, is like a stepwise projection at the bottom of the Mizbeach. Then you have the Mizbeach, then you have the side of the Mizbeach. Eventually it goes in, it has a recess of another Amma, that's the area where the Kohen walk around the Mizbeach. And then it goes up still further, and eventually you reach the top of the Mizbeach. Basically you can think of it as the Mizbeach was built as three big rectangles, one on top of the other. A big rectangle, then a smaller rectangle, so that the protrusion that's left from the bigger one becomes the Yesod, and then a smaller rectangle, or square actually I should say, not rectangle, which becomes the top few amas of the Mizbeach, and then in the corners of it you have the four corners. The Gemara will explain
this. The Yesod?
No, the Yesod is this thing down here.
Down.
Yeah.
And this is what?
This is called the Soiviv. It's a ledge that the Kohen would walk around the Mizbeach for when they were putting the blood of a Chatas on the Mizbeach. Yeah. So we see from this description they must have put these Aravos on top of the Yesod. The Yisak would either Ha'ara Manachlu, because if you were to say that they actually placed the Aravos on the floor, they wouldn't be tall enough. Mechdi, because let's consider, Ola Amma Vakonis Amma Zer Yesod, the Mizbeach goes up one Amma off the floor and then is recessed one Amma, and that one Amma recess is the Yesod, is the base of the Mizbeach, where they put the blood of the Korbanos. Ola Chomesh Vakonis Amma, then it goes up another five Ammas, and then it indents another Amma, Zer Soiviv, that second Amma is the Soiviv, is the ledge that the Kohen would walk around. Ola Shalosh, then it goes up another three, Zomach Makronos, and then you have the top of the Mizbeach, but you have the four horns at the corners of the Mizbeach. So in other words, all told, the Mizbeach was 10 amos tall from floor to the top of the Kronos. So it's 9 amos from floor to the top of the Mizbeach, exclusive of the Kronos. The problem is, and you have these two indents. Which means, in other words, that if you're measuring along the side of the Mizbeach, you're actually going on a diagonal. So therefore, the diagonal is going to be more than 9 amos. Of course, the diagonal is always longer than the straight side. So, and what you need is, on top of that, you need enough room. Again, you don't want the tops of the Arabas to actually be resting on the Mizbeach. That wouldn't be goichos. You want them to be like going up like this and then bending down. So like they're bending over the Mizbeach. So therefore, you have to consider, if you're saying the Arabas are 11 amos tall, and you have to already have nine and change amos to get from the floor to the top of the Mizbeach, you're not going to have enough left to be able to go over and then to be able to bend down. So it must be you place them on the Yisod. That way you're saving yourself a little more than an Amma. You're saving yourself the Amma height of the Yisod plus that first indent. And therefore you only need, now you only need 8 plus Ammas to get to the top. Fine, so then you have enough. Yeah, you're saving one Amma and a little more then. So Mepharshim asks the question, right, because the Yisod only, there's actually a Machlokas in Zvachim, whether the Yisod physically went around all four sides, but only two sides had the Kedusha of the Yisod, or whether there was physically no Yisod on two sides. If you say there was a Yisod on all four sides, there's an actual physical Yisod, no problem. If you say that there physically wasn't a Yisod on two sides, okay, so on those sides maybe they had to use longer Arabas, but at least on the first two sides, they were able to get away with 11 Amos. And that's what we're saying. So Shmamina, good, that proves it. Amar Rabbo, Maikra, what's a pasuk that expresses this idea that the Arabas should be overhanging the Mizbeach? Shenema, the pasuk says, Isru Chag Ba'avorisim Ad Karnas HaMizbeach. Isru means, Rashi says, here we're using it to mean surround. That's Oisri Lagafen Hiroi. So surround the Chag, meaning surround the Yom Tov with Avorisim, with branches from a tree. Avorisim means branches from a tree. Ad Karnas HaMizbeach, until the horns, which are higher than the Mizbeach. So therefore, you see that the Arabas have to go even higher than the horns and then bend downward. So therefore, Ad Karnas HaMizbeach, until and including the Karnas of the Mizbeach. So we see
they don't have to be higher than the Karnas HaMizbeach.
No, but they have to at least reach that height. That's why we're saying that they have to be that tall that they're able to bend downward and not quite reach the top of the Mizbeach.
That's a spiritual meaning of
it. We're going to get to it in a second. Here's another meaning. So anybody who doing sukkahs takes the lulav when it's properly bound and the hadas when it's thick. We know that a hadas has to be mishulash, but you can have it can be mishulash part of the way. It can be, you know, you have different colors. So you're taking a full thick three leaf hadas. Wait, supposed to, you're doing them, and similarly with the lulav bound, theoretically it doesn't have to be bound, the halacha doesn't have to, but you're binding it as a hidur mitzvah. So therefore, mala olav akasav, ki labonim is beach, v'ikur olav korban. The pasuk considers it on such a person as if he built them as beach and brought a korban on it.
When he took it from the...
When he does the mitzvah of lulav, the hidur, basically.
When a person does
the mitzvah of lulav, the hidur. When he's taking the lulav bound, which is a hidur mitzvah, and within that binding of lulav, you have proper three-leaved hadasim, and where there's three leaves, they're the mershaloshim for the full length, maybe even where you're taking extra hadasim as well, as we have the minhag to do. And the pasuk is considering it for having done the hidur mitzvah like that, as though he built the mizbeach and brought a korban on it.
The strict meaning of
means in its thickness. Shenema, here also we're darshaning the same pasuk. Isru chag ba'avos, and here we explain the words differently. Isru here means tie up, as in ties and binding up the lulav. Chag the yomtiv, ba'avosim with thick branches of hadasim. Ad karnas ha'mizbeach, and that's considered as though you brought a carbon that where the blood of it reaches the corners of the mizbeach. Ad ba'ad b'chal. No, but ad b'chal, because it's reaching up until the blood actually reaches the corners of the mizbeach. The Benny Hayada, I think it is, or maybe it's Orochaner, explains that what we're talking about specifically, the only kind of carbon where the blood is actually placed individually on the corners is a chatas. But here we're talking about, for example, the kind of chatas that's brought, as we have in this week's parasha, that's brought as part of the miluyim, that's brought as part of the inauguration of the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, when a person is doing the mitzvah of lulav, mitzvah of dalet minim properly, then it's considered as though he's bringing the karbanos to inaugurate the third Beis Hamikdash. Amar Rav Yirmiyah Mishum. And here's another meaning of the pasuk. Amar Rav Yirmiyah Mishum Rav Shimon Yechai. And Rav Yechanan Mishum Rav Shimon HaMachuzi Mishum Rav Yechanan HaMachuzi. So they all said, Kol ha'oseh isur l'chag ba'achilu shtia, anybody who makes a connection to the Yom Tov with eating and drinking, Mala, all of our kosher kila bonim mizbeach yikur al the korban. Again, the pasuk considers it as though he built the mizbeach and brought on a korban. This is the third meaning of the pasuk. Shenem isru chag ba'avosim, tie together the Yom Tov with avosim, meaning avosim here we use to mean thick, as in thick, fat, fatty animals. Like you're making a soda, ad kanes mizbeach, and again it's considered like you brought a korban up to the horns of the mizbeach. So that for, so what does it mean to make a connection to the Yom Tov? So according to Rashi, Rashi says two possibilities. Number one, it means that you're connecting the joy of the Yom Tov with eating and drinking. You're partially being mechabed the Yom Tov by eating and drinking, which we know you're supposed to do chetzil Hashem v'chetzil Lachem. You're connecting those two things together. You're celebrating the Yom Tov the way you're supposed to. Second explanation in Rashi is it's talking about what we call Isru Chag. This is where we get the name of Isru Chag, the day after Yom Tov, that you honor the day after Yom Tov with a little extra eating and drinking. And in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it says, based on this, that you're supposed to do that. Because then the idea is, you're mamshich, the Kedusha of Yom Tov, that you want to bring the Kedusha of the Yom Tov into the rest of the year, into Chol. And Marsha has one more explanation, that going back to the idea of Rashi's first explanation, that it means the eating and drinking on Yom Tov itself. It also means that a person makes for himself an Isser in the sense that we usually would use the word Isser, that he controls himself, he eats and drinks, but he controls himself that it shouldn't lead him to Averis. Because we know that Rambam writes in Hilchos Yom Tov that the Yom Tov is one of those times of year when especially Beis Din is responsible for putting out guards to make sure people don't mingle and people don't do inappropriate things and whatever. So a person who does an Isser, a person who enjoys himself on Yom Tov, but in a responsible way, is Mala Olav.
He says honoring Yom Tov, normally it's Simchan and Yom Tov, but honoring on Shabbos. What's the difference between honoring and Simchan? Or is there any difference?
There is a difference because, for example, by Shabbos we don't specifically say Simcha. Simcha specifically is Bas of Yayin, where we say that Simcha of Yom Tov really is Simcha by eating Shlomim and drinking V'achalta V'savacha Shlomim V'achalta Sham. So we don't necessarily have that kind of Simcha nowadays, but we can still have the Oinig of Yom Tov.
We refer to the first 2 days or first day of Yom Tov.
We're talking about primarily the actual days of Yom Tov, but yeah, it includes Chol HaMoed also. You are supposed to honor Chol HaMoed also with food and drink. The Aruch HaNer says that actually these three drashas are combined, all go together. First the Gemara was talking about this Zman Shebeis Mitzvah Shkayim, how are you fulfilling the Pasuk Yisru Chag Ba'avosim by putting the Arabas around the Mizbeach. Then, nowadays, we don't have a Beis Mikdash, so you can be Mekayim it the second way, by making sure you're taking Lulav and Esrog properly. What happens, a person, Nebuch, doesn't even have Lulav and Esrog, then at least he's still able to be Mekayim, he's still able to be Bonim as Beach, Beach, and Volok Korban, by honoring Yom Tov as he should.
On Yisrael, you don't need Lulav.
No, there's the third thing. There's the third thing, that you're honoring the Yom Tov by being Mamshechit into the rest of the year.
All
mitzvahs, a person can only be yotze with them in the direction in which they grow. Therefore, when it comes to lulav and esrog, you have to make sure you're holding them upright. For example, in the instructions in for Netilas lulav in the Siddur, the Altareba makes a specific point of mentioning when you're talking about when you're supposed to do the dalad minim downward. The Altareba specifically says, don't think it means you turn the lulav upside down. It means you move your hands in a downward motion.
Because it has to be
upright. It has to be in the direction in which it grows. And this is, by the way, why you have in the velt, what they do is when it comes to making the bracha on the esrog, they first start holding the esrog upside down, and then after they finish saying Shech Yonu, or while they're saying Shech Yonu or whatever, they flip it right side up. We actually don't do that, or minute, because we don't take the esrog at all until we're done the bracha. One idea of it is because there is an argument to be made that maybe the esrog does not, there is an argument to be made, I think I've seen it from the Vilna Gaon, that maybe the esrog does not have to be held derech vilasan, because maybe derech vilasan only applies to the ones that are branches from trees. Not necessarily the esrog, which is a fruit. So therefore, you could argue maybe that you are yotze even by holding it upside down. Anyway, shenema, as the pasuk says, ase shittim omdim. It says when they built the mishkan that they had to build it out of standing pieces of shittim wood. So first of all, Rashi says on the pasuk it means standing in the sense they didn't make them like a board, like the sides of a ship or whatever, horizontally. But also it means each board had to be in the direction in which it came from the live tree. Tanya Nami Hacha, we learn similar than Braisa. After Shittim Omdim means for Omdim Derech Vilasa, it means they stand in the direction in which they grow. Dover Acha, another explanation of the word Omdim, this we had in Yuma. Shema Midin es Sipoya, and it means that they help their coating stay on. Meaning, Rashi says, we know each of the boards of the Mishkan, each of the Kerashim, was plated with gold. It wasn't just they took a piece of gold and hammered it out and made it to the size of the Keresh and just put it next to it and it's going to stay and it'll stand over there. They would nail it on with nails. They would actually nail it on with little golden nails. So therefore, the wood helps the gold stay on by gripping the nail.
The sheets of gold, they used to nail them to.
They nailed them. So that they stay. Dover Acha, another explanation. Omdim means Shema Tomar. You might think to say Avad Sivra Mabotel Sikuyam. The hope and the future of these Kerashim is gone, because what happened? Eventually, they didn't need the Mishkan anymore. When they built the Beis Mikdash, they hid the Mishkan. They hid the Mishkan away in the tunnels under the Beis Mikdash. So you're going to think that means okay, that's it. They're gone. They're never again going to be needed. They're never again going to be seen. No, Tamabama at the Shittim Omdim. No, therefore the prophet says they're Shittim wood that stands. Sha Omdim La'olam 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 means they stand, they're existing forever and ever.
Where are they?
Under the Bismith or someplace in one of the tunnels over there. But actually Rashi brings on the Gemara on this in Yuma that it also means that, this is on the previous one, Shema Bin Netzipuria, and besides the thing about the nail, it also meant that the wood itself never rotted. The wood itself never rotted, so therefore the coating, the gold coating, always stays stuck to it. But since we said something that Chizkiah said in the name of Rabbi Yirmiyahu, who said in the name of Rosh Hashanah Yechai, which had to do with the dinim of lulav, now the Gemara brings another thing that he said. Famous thing. V'amar Chizkiah Amar Rabbi Yirmiyahu Meshum Rosh Hashanah Yechai, Yochalani lifted as kol olam kolay min adin. I would be able to, with my own schus, Rashbi is saying, to pater the whole world from Hashem's judgment, miyom shenivresi ad ata, from when I was created until now, for my whole lifetime. In other words, no.
No,
it's not Gaiva, it's saying his Mila. It's expressing what he's accomplishing in the world. And if I have my son Elazar with me, then I could do even more. We two together could pass the whole world from judgment in our combined schus. As Rashi says, Ani Sobel, Kol Avanei Seima, Potim and Adin, we would be able to bear all of their Averas and pass to them from Hashem's judgment, Miyom Shenivra Olam Vad Achshav, from when the world was created until now. V'yomola Yosem, Ben Uziyahu Imanu, and if we, as well, we also had with us Yosem, the son of Uziyahu, who is one of the kings of Yehuda. He's actually the only king of Yehuda about which the Pasuk has nothing negative to say about him, first of all. That's one thing. Obviously, he was a tzaddik. Second of all, his great tzchus, Rashi says, is that Rashi says he was a tzaddik and an honor of more than the other kings. And also, his greatness was he excelled in kibud av. His father Uziyahu, we have the famous story that Uziyahu thought that he should serve Hashem in the Beis Hamikdash. He should go in and offer ketores. The kohenim stood up against him, and at the last moment, Uziyahu, as he's about to bring the ketores, all of a sudden gets tzaras, and he has to get out of there as fast as possible. For the rest of his life, Uziyahu is quarantined with Sarat. It never healed. And so somebody needs to take over. Somebody needs to run the country. His son Uziyahu took over as regent. Not Uziyahu. Uziyahu was the king. Well, his son Yosam took over as regent. But throughout that time, Uziyahu ended up having Sarat from then until he passed away. It was 25 years. During all those 25 years, when Yosam is acting as regent, anything that he did, any royal decrees or whatever, he would always check with his father first and do it and do it in his father's name. So that's a tremendous chus. And because of that, if we had us to be together, then we could have Miyam Shinibra Ulamat Sofer. We'd have the three of us together, would have enough chusim to be able to pastor everybody from Hashem's judgment from the beginning of the world till the end. For all of human history. Masha also adds that it doesn't explicitly say in the pasuk, so I'm not sure where Masha knows this from, but I think he says they have the Kabbalah, that Yosem suffered a lot during his lifetime. He didn't live very long. He became king when he was 25, and he ruled for 16 years. So he passed away at age only 41. But that he had started. Actually, the pasuk does mention that towards the end of his reign, that towards the end of his reign, the Goyim started harassing out the Israel, so maybe that's part of it. Whatever it is, he didn't get his schar in this world. So therefore, his schar is still available, just like Rav Shimon Yochai and Rav Elazar, to be able to save the whole world. There's also a fascinating thing that Rav Levit goes through in the Kutta Levi Yitzchak, goes through at some length, explaining the deeper idea. He explains that Yosef, in every detail that the pasuk does tell us about Yosef, and there are a few of them, he associates with that Yosef is related to Leah, which therefore is related to Gvura. So therefore you have, and Gvura in turn is not so much Gvura, but Bina. Leah is Bina. So he explains how Yosef, and he explains in detail how every detail of Yosef's life and career is related to Bina. Rashbi himself is Das, and Rav Elazar, his son, is Chochmah. So therefore, together you have, so the three of them together makes up Chochmah, Bina, and Das, and therefore the three of them are able to work together like this. There's also the Rebbe mentioned this idea in many sichas. Naturally, a lot of them are out like Boimer, that the idea of why Taka does Rashbi and Rav Elazar have this tremendous power, and the next thing the Gemara is going to say about them also, the next special thing, is because they're the ultimate examples of Teradasa Yom Nasi. They're the ultimate example of that. They spent their entire time, especially we know in the cave, those 13 years, but even afterwards, that they focused only on Limud HaTorah. And that's what gave them the advantage that we're dealing with here. Maybe that's also why before, when the Gemara mentioned about the things from the Dalet Minim, it specifically singled out the Lulav and the Hadas. The Lulav we know represents the that wouldn't work, because the Hadas is the Baal Mitzvahs. All right, so never mind that. I've seen the Bnei Aliyah, the highest level people. You know, the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya in Perek Yud two reasons why they're called Bnei Aliyah. One of them because they're the ones who are Mila, the things of this world, to Kedusha. And the other reason is because they do their avodah solely for the sake of the Eibishter, solely for the sake of the Eibishter who is higher than us, not for any external reason. Like the Alter Rebbe said, I don't want your Gan Eden, I don't want your Olam Haba, all I want is you. That's Bnei Aliyah. So Rashbi says, Ra'isi Bnei Aliyah v'hen mu'atan. I've seen the Bnei Aliyah and they're very few. Im Elohain, if there are 1,000 of them, ani uvni mehen, then I and my son, Rebbe Lazar, are among them. Im Meyahain, if there's 100 of them, ani uvni mehen, then again, me and my son are among them. Im Shnayin Hain, if there's only two in the entire world, Ani Uvni Hain, then those are me and my son. Mefarshim say that actually, one of the Mefarshim say that the vote is, Rashbi was shown, like in a, I think Yad Yirmah says this on Sanhedrin, where this Gemara is also brought, that like he was shown in a dream, like you and your son are among the Bnei Aliyah, are definitely among the Bnei Aliyah, so therefore Rashbi is saying, no matter what, even if it should be the case that in the entire history of the world, in the entire 6,000 years of the world, there's only two Bnei Aliyah, I'm guaranteed from that dream of mine that me and my son Elazar are the two of us, are the two of them. And if there are more, so in Exodus it explains, it's not if, I mean obviously, you know, it is what it is, but there's a level of Bnei Aliyah of which there are 1,000, there's a higher level within Bnei Aliyah itself of which there are only 100, and then there's a higher level than that of which there are only two. So Bnei Aliyah is a certain thing. Actually, we'll get to it in a minute. Actually, wait. Till we talk about Esfaklal Yamira in a second. Some of Farshim want to say actually that he doesn't mean throughout all the generations. He just means in this generation, if there are 1,000, or if there are 100, etc. But then, yeah. Yeah.
That they can rely on him, or
well, in a way they did, because we know the famous thing that during his times there was never a rainbow scene because his Chosin Taka protected the generation. But it's also that's the point that I was mentioning before that Rebbe makes is it's expressing the idea that everybody should understand the importance of Teratz Yom Nasi, what power that has. But even after that, we're saying that he focused exclusively on learning Torah. The Gemara mentions in a number of places that because of that, Rashbi is potter from most mitzvahs.
If he can redeem the whole humanity from the creation of the world, So what he did goes beyond his life and beyond.
Well, so no, he himself is saying can only do for his own generation. Together with the son, Rabbi Elazar, he could do more. And together with Yosef, he could do even more. Yeah.
So they could do all the future.
So they, all the future and all the past, according to that, yeah. So the Gemara asked, wait a minute, or Miz Dutri Kula Ai, are you telling me there's so few Bnei Aliyah? V'ha'omar Rava, T'mani Srei Alfidora Hava Dekame Kutchabrihu. There are 18,000 rows of tzaddikim surrounding Hashem. Shenemar, or actually Rabbeinu Hananel has a different gear, so Tosfos mentions it also, but they say they don't really like it, which is that the row of tzaddikim around Hashem extends for 18,000 parsa, which is a lot of people. Yeah. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Saviv Shmoina Asar Elef, the last Pasuk of Sefer Yecheskel is describing Yerushalayim Lasid Lover. It says, surrounding it, the simple meaning of the Pasuk is the circumference of the city of Yerushalayim. The Yecheskel describes it as a square, 4,500 amos on a side, so therefore the total circumference is 18,000 amos. But the Gemara is doubted because the Pasuk ends off, V'shema Ir Miyoyim Hashem Shama, that the name of the city will be Hashem is there, so therefore the Gemara is doubting that it's not just talking about the city of Yerushalayim on earth, it's talking about the Yerushalayim Shamayla, it's talking about the inner circle of Hashem, the Maila, where Hashem is, where Hashem's Shekhinah is, that there's 18,000 around. And Rashi has an interesting expression also, which is that those 18,000 rows or parsais or whatever of tzaddikim are like the inner circle, even the Malachim can't get in there. The Pasuk in one of Bilam's Nevoros, where he expresses this idea, he says that there'll come a time when they'll be asking the Jewish people, what is Hashem doing? Like even the Malachim are going to have to ask the Tzaddikim, what's going on in there? We have to stay out here.
Because they cannot have access.
Yeah, because the Tzaddikim have no access.
Because they wanted to keep the Torah for themselves.
Yeah. So you see, you have a lot of Tzaddikim. You're not just talking about 2 or 1,000 or whatever. The answer is loikasha hadu mistakli b'isbaklawi ameira hadu loy mistakli b'isbaklawi ameira. You have the ones who are able to see Hashem through a clear glass, and you have the ones who are able to see through an unclear glass. So in other words, you have the 18,000 rows of tzaddikim; they're very close to Hashem, but they still have isbaklawi she'ena meira. Their experience of Hashem is not total. The Bnei Aliyah that we were talking about before reached the highest level. That said they're beyond even Tzaddikim Gemurim, as the Alter Rebbe explains in Perek Yud of Tanya. You have Tzaddikim Gemurim, and then on top of that, you have Bnei Aliyah. So those Bnei Aliyah are able to actually experience the Eved with Esbachai Amira. So you asked them before about Moshe Rabbeinu. There's Bachal. I mean, everybody asks, many of the Mefarshim ask the question. Marsha asks, many of the other Mefarshim ask. I mean, we say that Moshe had an Esbachai Amira, not even all the other Nevi'im had that. So what are we talking about, that there may be 1,000 or 100 or whatever people who have it?
Yeah.
So one answer is Marsha says, and the Alter Rebbe explains similarly in Igeres Yud Tes in Tanya, that there's a difference between seeing Hashem and understanding Hashem. The Alter Rebbe explains over there in Igeres Yud Tes that, for example, the Arizal's understanding of it's brought in Kisvei Arizal that the Arizal that Moshe Rabbeinu's Hasaga of Elokus went only as high as Nehim. As Acharayim of Nehim of Yetzirah, I think, and the Alter Rebbe asks over there. I mean, so what the Arizal and all the other Mekubalim talk about much higher levels than that. How are they higher than Moshe? Moshe had the ultimate experience of Hashem. He says that's different, right? So he says that's the difference. Moshe, we're talking about what Moshe saw, versus we're talking about what the Arizal and so forth understood. Understanding is not the same as seeing. On the seeing level, Moshe is the only one who ever had a Sfaklai Amira. But on the understanding level, you have the Bnei Aliyah who are able to understand using an Asbaklari Amira. And those are the Bnei Aliyah that we're talking about.
In other words, without having seen actually Panim Panim, they could understand.
They could understand in a very clear way, yes. There's also, I think there are other Mepharshim who explain that the difference is that Moshe was able to experience Hashem, to see Hashem with Asbaklari Amira while he was alive. These other Tzaddikim we're talking about maybe after they passed away. So the Gemara asks, on the other hand, still you're telling me the ones who see Hashem through a clear Asbaklaria are so few? V'omar Abai, you're saying that there may only be as few as 1,000 of them, and maybe even only as few as 2? V'omar Abai, like Pachas Alma, Mitzlas and Veshisa Tzaddiki, the world has no less than 36 Tzaddikim, the Mekabli, Apa Shechina, B'chol Yom, who greet the face of the Shechina every day. If they're greeting the face of the Shechina, obviously means they have Asbaklaria Meira. So there's at least 36 in every generation. This is probably where we got the idea of the famous Lamed Vav Tzaddikim, although Gemara doesn't say anything about them being hidden Tzaddikim, but okay.
There's also supposed to be 36 in the Israel and 36 outside of it.
That's a different thing. The Gemara in Cholin talks about that there were 45 great tzaddikim in every generation where there's either 30 in Eretz Yisrael and 15 outside it, or vice versa. That's the Gemara in Holland. Why 36? Shenema, the pasuk says, Ashrei kol choychei loy, happy are all those who wait for loy. Loy, b'gematria, tlofen v'shita, but the word loy means 36. So happier is everybody who aspires to be one of the 36. So then there's 36. And if it's 36 at all times, that means throughout the generations there's been tens of thousands. The answer is loy kasha, hod aili b'bar, hod aili b'loy bar. One is, we're talking about this one group of people who are able to enter Hashem's presence without bar, without permission. They can just walk in anytime they want. There are very few. They're the Bnei Aliyah. Then you have the ones who they're able to tackle, they're able to greet the Shekhinah every day. But like, so to speak, they need to knock on the door first. They need permission. Then Rabbi Hanan has two other explanations. One is that Aili B'Bayar means they're able to come in with their children. That not only they are tzaddikim gemurim, but so are their children. That's a very rare thing indeed. That's in fact why, Mefarshim say, that is why, even though we had before about Yosem, about its tremendous course that together with Rashbi and Rabbi Lazar, they'd be able to pass through the whole world from Din, but Yosem is not included in this Bnei Aliyah group because his son was a Rasha. His son, Achaz, the next king after him, was a Rasha. He didn't manage to have his son be a Tzaddik Gomer like himself. So for a person to be a Tzaddik Gomer and his son is, that's a very rare thing, and that's what we're talking about, the very few Bnei Aliyah. Rashbi was. His son, Rabbi Lazar, was in that category. And then one more, Rabbi Hanan says is Aili B'Bar and Aili B'Loy Bar. That Bar means outside. That means like you have the ones who have to wait outside until they're given permission to enter, and then you have the ones who can just walk right in. Mishnah had said.
So regarding the Megillah, actually, Esther had to wait outside. She couldn't go to Ahasuerus walking
directly. That's true. Yeah. The Mishnah had said b'shas p'tidos and mahenoim imcholo, that when they were leaving either every day of Sukkot or after or on a Shana Rabbah, what would they say? They said, so we said we had a machlokus of the Mishnah. They said yofi lach mizbeach, yofi lach mizbeach, or they said l'kav lach mizbeach, for Hashem and for you mizbeach. So the question is, what do you mean combining? V'hakam eshtakev shem shemayim v'dava acha. You're combining together the name of Hashem and something else in your praise. V'tanya, and we learn in a braisa, kol eshtakev shem shemayim v'dava acha nefem and olam. Anybody who combines together Hashem's name with something else is uprooted from the world. This is, by the way, the famous thing why Christianity is a v'dazara for, definitely for us Jews, and according to the Rambam, even for Goyim, Christianity is classic shittuf. But here, okay, we're not worshipping the mizbeach, chas v'shalom, but still, how can you speak of the mizbeach and Hashem in one breath? So Tosfos and Sanhedrin, where the Gemara talks about this, points out why we have psukim that do like that. We have, for example, Cherev LaHashem LeGidyon. When Gidyon is attacking the Midianim, he tells his men to shout out a sword for Hashem and for Gidyon. And we have a few places in the pasuk where we say LaHashem and something else. The difference is Tosfos says in those cases we're obviously not talking about anything that's being worshipped. Obviously nobody is worshipping Gidyon or respecting him as a god. Or it's Cherev. And the same thing all the other psukim. Whereas here, okay, nobody's worshipping the Mizbeach per se, but after all, it is an object of Kedusha. It's something that you might think people, you know, among the Goyim, they did. They worshipped their altars. So you still might have a problem that it's considered Shittuf.
What's the story with the
Yeah. That's Shittuf. That's Shittuf.
Right.
The Muslims, according to almost all Rishonim, Islam is not a desire. Only the Ran holds that it is.
But
it's not Shittur. They're not combining Hashem with anything else. It's Kfirah because they believe that the Torah that we have is corrupt and that only they have the true version of it, etc. And that the Meshuggah that they have as their prophet is a true Navi, etc. So it's Kfirah, but it's not a desire according to almost all Rishonim, and it's not Shittur people.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. That's what I'm saying. That's why according to the Rambam and most Rishonim, Islam is not a Bedazara. A person who is being given the choice to convert to Islam or to die doesn't necessarily have to go, okay, to Hashem for it. He should get out of there as fast as possible. This is the famous thing that Rambam writes in Yigeret Hashemad, but it's not as bad as a Yid converting to Christianity, which is, according to the Rambam, is outright a Bedazara even for Goyim, and everybody agrees it's a Bedazara for us because it's Shittuf. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Bilti LaHashem Levada." It's talking about it in the pasuk about bringing korbanos, but still, it applies to anything else, only to Hashem alone. The answer is Hakakamale. What they mean in their expression is Hakakamale. What they mean is like this: it is breaking up. They're saying, "Laka Anachnu Moedim, Hashem we acknowledge as our God, Laka Anu Meshabchin, and you Mizbeach we are praising that you're so precious to Hashem that you are that through you we're able to have kapara." and l'kah anu moedim, and Hashem we acknowledge, or l'kah anu makalsin, and you mizbeach we praise. So we see, we are separating the mizbeach and Hashem, where each of them is a thing of its own. We acknowledge that Hashem is our one and only Hashem, and we're praising, and saying good things about the mizbeach that we're able to accomplish such great things with it.
Through the mizbeach, we're saying
we have kapara, that we bring kaparas, yeah.
The kapara comes from Hashem.
It comes from Hashem, but Hashem allows us to have it through the mizbeach, so therefore, yeah. The Mishnah said, "K'maaseh b'chol," that just as they did the mitzvah of Arava on weekdays, so also they did it on Shabbos. And then we had the machlokas in the Mishnah about, we said that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka said that they took palm branches and beat them on the sides of the mizbeach, or on the floor around the mizbeach. Amar upona, my time with Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka. What's Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka's reason? Because the pasuk says kapois. The pasuk says kapois tmarim. Kapois is plural. Branches of palm trees. Now we know we only take one lulav. So it must be achas lulav v'achas mizbeach. It means one is taken for the lulav, one is taken for the mizbeach. Which means, in other words, Tosfos says it means that he's arguing on Abba. We had Abba Shaul before saying that we learned from Arvei Nachal, that the two types of Aravot, one for the Arava in the Talad Minim and one for the one in the Mismikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka is arguing with that and saying, no, instead of darshaning Arvei we use for one of the other purposes that we said, they need two Aravot, or you can use an Arava even if it doesn't grow by the river, etc. Instead, I'm using the word Kapos to mean that you need two kinds of Lulav. Rab Levi Rabbanan, what would the Rabbanan answer to that? They say kapasksiv. The pasuk it says kapos without a vav, so we can read it as though it said kapas singular. That's why we say we take one lulav. So therefore, also it means there's only one lulav. There's not a second one for a second mitzvah. Rab Levi Amar Ketama. Rab Levi says it's not based on a drasha. It's based and nothing to do with a drasha. It's a svara that a lulav, that a palm branch is an appropriate thing to use as a praise for the Jewish people, as a siman for the Jewish people. Why? Ma tomer ze ein le'el lev echad, just like a palm tree only has one heart. So Rashi says what that means is, like you have, you cut open a typical tree, it has rings. And not only the trunk of the tree, it has many rings, one inside the other. And not only the trunk has rings, so do all the branches. Smaller rings, but it still has rings. A palm tree, if you cut down a palm tree, the trunk of it, it's one undifferentiated thing. And it only has that one trunk. There's no rings, and the branches that grow off it don't have that pith inside them in the first place. It's made out of a different kind of material, basically. So therefore, a palm tree only has one heart. So also the Jewish people have only one heart, which is directed towards Hashem. So therefore, a lulav branch, a palm branch, is an appropriate symbol of the praise of Jewish people, how loyal we are to Hashem.